Please welcome our next speakers, Martin Schwenke and Amitai Isaacs with the CTDB Report 2020.
Right. Okay. Do we have slides? Good, the chat window's gone away. All right. I'm going to assume people can hear me. I cannot see the chat window because it has disappeared.
Forget about it. I'll look at the chat window while you're talking.
Okay, thank you. All right. First of all, thank you to CNET for actually making something happen this year in these strange times. So thank you for that. This is a talk about CTDB. CTDB is a component in clustered Samba that I'll talk about in a moment to introduce. I'll be giving a bunch of this presentation and Amitai Isaacs will be taking over for the middle section. We won't be too interactive back and forth as we usually would because the technology makes it a little harder. All right.
Thank you. So, thank you for waiting till both of us are completely asleep.
Yeah, I also come from the country that the Wiggles come from. If I fall asleep mid-talk, please yell out, wake up, Martin. All right. Okay, so the talk is going to cover three main topics. It's going to cover progress in CTDB in the last year. It is going to cover the plans that we have discussed at previous SambraXP conferences and what's happening with them. We're going to briefly discuss the potential way forward and we'll take any questions. So who's the audience for this talk? Well, it really is a developer talk, but we're not that scary, so please don't leave. You know, you might get some insight out of this if you're not a developer. And it might be valuable. So don't go off and make a 45-minute cup of coffee or drink 45 minutes worth of beer. Okay, so we want to cluster Samba so that we can scale out and improve reliability. So we want to run essentially multiple SMB servers for clients to connect to, and they need to share a bunch of metadata, and they need to do it fairly quickly, and they do it using a component that runs on all of the cluster nodes called CTDB. So that yellow section down the bottom is what we're talking about. So CTDB has a bunch of functions. The first thing it does is that it provides a cluster database for Samba metadata. Samba uses TDB as a database, as a key value store for metadata. CTDB just clusters that. So the data is available on all nodes and is distributed around the place. It also provides a cluster-wide messaging transport, so Samba nodes can talk to each other. It provides some cluster management. There's a cluster leader, which we call the recovery master for some historical reasons, and it manages cluster membership, so nodes can join the cluster, be banned if they misbehave, be administratively stopped, things like that. It also provides failover of dynamic IP addresses, that if one node goes down, clients that are connected reconnect to another node when IP addresses move. So, what have we done in the past year? Well, the good news is there have been, I think that's over a dozen people who've contributed to CTDB. Excuse me, it hasn't been the busiest component in Samba, but you know, we've made some progress. Looking over that list, I would say that most of the people on that list are Samba team members, and there are a few others out there also making contributions. So thank you to everyone who's contributed, and we hope to see many more contributions to CTDB to keep making it better. Looking at those 349 commits in the past year, a huge number of them are test related. I'll go into details on these topics in a moment. But I'll just run through them quickly. So a lot of test improvements, quite a few general code cleanups, improvements in various technical areas. But unfortunately, typos, people had more time to fix typos than various important technical things. And that's just the way things are. We continue. Okay, the big news, which isn't really a CTDB topic, but is worth mentioning here, is that clustered Samba is now tested in Samba's auto build. Auto build is the system that Samba uses kind of for CI. It's the gatekeeper so that every time somebody tries to push some commits to the Samba repository, they have to go through this battery of tests called auto build. And while we tested CTDB, and we tested Samba, we didn't test them together. So Michael Adam originally started trying to test this combination about 5 years ago, or maybe it's more. Sometime, I think it was last year, well, Volker Lendecker has been saying for years that we need to make this work or things will break. And then things finally did break. Volker got justifiably grumpy and insisted that we get this working, and he started working hard on it. And he was having a couple of problems with CTDB because the configuration was a bit of a moving target. And last year, I encapsulated our ability to start a bunch of local CTDB test daemons in a script. So I helped him by incorporating that. And this was initially just a single test, just to make sure that clustered Samba is working. And now I believe there are a couple more tests in there. We've also spent some time grouping collections of test suites so they're easier to think about, easier to run. You can just say run all the unit tests, you can run all the integration tests. So this is a good thing. And, you know, we've cleaned up some things. We run various branches through the test suite every night, and sometimes we see flapping tests, flaky tests, and as we see them, try to fix them. So testing in CTDB, quite a lot better than it was 12 months ago. Code cleanup. Andreas started mentioning a Red Hat's tool called CS Build, which just turns on a stack of warnings and does some static analysis. The standalone CTDB compile nearly passes CS Build now. There are just a few things we haven't bothered to clean up. The CTDB subdirectory is now unsigned clean, so there are no more warnings about unsigned signed comparisons. I'm working slowly towards making the things from the rest of the Samba tree that are included in the standalone C2B compile clean as well. Some of that is TDB itself and scares me a little. More of our shell scripts are now past shell check, so our code quality is improving. Quite a lot of effort put into that in the last year. Vacuuming is what C2B calls garbage collection. Cleaning up empty records, because that's the thing you have to be careful doing in a distributed database. Amate had some patches sitting in a branch for, I think it was over a year. To simplify this, some of the work was done in C2B's all-purpose recovery daemon. And Amate moved all that into the child that gets spawned to do vacuuming. And now C2B, the vacuuming child, fetches any records that need to be deleted via the location master. It fetches them to the location master now. The nice thing about that is we can now trigger each stage of the vacuuming process, which means I spent about a month writing some nice fine-grained tests to make sure the vacuuming behaves exactly as we expect it to. So we finally have vacuuming tested, and you know, lo and behold, we did find one or two bugs in the process. You know, I wrote the test and then went to Amate, what's going on here? My test doesn't seem to be working. And he's like, yeah, that's right. It looks like we have a bug. So that was good. More code sort of where it's best placed. One place where we spent a reasonable amount of effort in the past 12 or so months is in the TCP connectivity code, which you would think would be solid as a rock. But we started seeing some connectivity problems. I started running some tests with, you know, 100 or 200 local daemons, and there would always be a couple of them that wouldn't connect to each other. So when we looked carefully, we found that CTDB's notion of connectivity depended on actually receiving packets rather than just the TCP connections being made. And looking carefully through some of the code paths, we found that packets aren't always sent between nodes. It's almost, in some cases, it's accidental that they are. And the problem here is that CTDB overloads the notion of connectivity here and tries to make it, you know, a TCP connection, and tries to say we've got something logical happening on top of the TCP connection. But it doesn't really, it's not really in the design. So we're trying to have it both ways and it doesn't work. So anyway, the first thing we did was reverted a commit that was over 10 years old. So the connectivity now is just at the TCP level. If we connect TCP wise, we mark a node as connected. However, then we noticed some timeouts at startup, and we noticed that another change meant that we could send requests, but the replies got dropped sometimes when we were only connected in one direction. So we fixed that, and then I left a bug in there that orphaned the incoming queue, and that was pretty nasty. So we fixed that. And then late in the piece, a couple of people noticed that, in fact, three separate people noticed that we were rejecting connections after a hard reboot, or when somebody added some firewall rules and then dropped the firewall rules and we were meant to reconnect. We didn't shut down a connection that we should have, so we fixed this. So the TCP code in CTDB is now much cleaner and more comprehensible. And that's actually thanks to a bunch of people. You know, Amate and I did a bunch of the work. One night when I couldn't figure out what the heck was going on, I explained the whole thing to Volker. We both agreed that there couldn't be a problem. And a couple of hours after I went to sleep, he found it. So that was pretty awesome. And Noel and Ralph worked on the rejecting of connections after the hard reboot with us, and we got a really good solution there. So a good team effort. Very small improvement in our cluster mutex, which we currently use as a recovery lock. We had an event script that just tested for, during monitoring, it checked for the existence of the recovery lock. And, you know, if it was missing 100 times or something, it shut down CTDB, and this wasn't very satisfactory. So we thought, well, what if somebody just, you have a lock on this file, an F-control lock. What happens if somebody moves it and replaces it with another file or does something stupid? What if the inode number changes? Well, we should monitor that sort of thing. So actually in our F-control helper, we now monitor that every 5 seconds just to make sure that nothing crazy has happened. And that meant it's really easy to write some tests. And that's another area where the code has improved. So we still have a problem where nodes can be elected as leader before connected, and you get into a weird situation, kind of a split brain without a real split brain. So we can fix this. We can add a leader broadcast so that whoever is elected as the leader broadcasts its superiority. And the other nodes, when they join the cluster, should just wait a few seconds for a leader broadcast before triggering an election. The next step that we can do then is we can take the cluster lock when we win an election. Instead of taking the recovery lock on the first recovery, then we have a cluster lock. And once we have that, elections with a lock aren't terribly useful, because if you petition your cluster 10 nodes to one, and the one node has the cluster lock, then your other 10 nodes will all try to take the lock as their elected leader of their own cluster, of their own petition. Then they'll get banned, and you'll still have the one node with the lock being the leader of its own cluster. So you might as well just race to take the lock. Whoever has it wins anyway. So I've got an experimental branch there, which is surprisingly easy to pass, to write, and the test pass. And I'm pretty excited about that. So I'm hoping to get that in the next few months, but it's not there yet. We had a couple of recovery fixes. Every so often we see a bug involving resurrection of deleted records in CTDB. We added this excellent notion where we just invalidate database records when a node becomes inactive so that that node's databases don't take part in the next election. However, I saw occasional test failures and found the bug where a node can become inactive, say when we run CTDB stop. Another node notices that recovery is active and initiates recovery before the databases are marked invalid. Recovery begins, it includes the invalid node, the inactive node. Meanwhile, database records are marked invalid, but then that recovery completes and we clear the flag. Nodes become active, node becomes active. We continue, we do a recovery when we continue, and we include database contents from the inactive node, and that's actually, and resurrects records that have been deleted. However, this is easily fixed by Amate doing some nice restructuring. We just confirm flags of remote nodes and at the last minute and drop anyone who shouldn't be involved in the recovery. So it's pretty simple. A related bug in roughly the same code was where we were just seeing nodes banned unexpectedly sometimes. And it was a hangover from when we used to support both parallel recovery and the old serial recovery where we recovered databases one after each other. The first thing was that missing databases were attached by the recovery daemon. Databases are frozen in the recovery helper, with a potentially different set of nodes. The recovery helper retrieves the status of nodes. And latent joining nodes might not have all the databases attached because there's a gap between when the recovery daemon attaches missing databases and the recovery helper checks what nodes are active. So late joining nodes can be banned. And this is just fixed by moving the attach of the missing databases from being common code in the recovery daemon and moving that code into the recovery helper. Nice, simple fix. A recent one is that regards hot records. Hot records are those that have been migrated the most times in some 1 second period. And, you know, they're something we look at when we're looking at performance issues. The 10 hottest records recorded are recorded as a per database statistic. And recording of hot records, database statistics was broken. There was a broken sort in there. There was another one or two bugs. And the logging wasn't terribly useful. We logged that a hot record had been updated the first time it was added. But if the count per second increased 2 hours later, we didn't log it. So fix that. And that now works a lot better. Plans. Okay, so Amitai is going to tell us all about the great plans we have in store for CTDB, which means I need to now do the magic to stop sharing. Stop sharing. Here comes Amitai.
Thanks, Martin. Okay. So we have been talking about splitting CTDB daemon, which is a monolithic daemon which tries to do everything in a single daemon, into separate functional daemons for a while now. And we have presented many ideas on how we want to go about doing it at previous Samba XP talks. So the current status of the previous attempt which we tried to do about trying to separate these daemons was based on the event daemon implementation which we already have, and that's one thing which we separated first, and that served as a template for trying to separate other daemons as well. So we did implement a service daemon based on the event daemon design, and then we also tried to, in a hurry, implement failover and connection tracking. And we realized that there are lots of issues with the way the code has been organized, and so we identified a few flaws. So we decided against merging all that code into the code base, and we have been trying to work on coming up with different ideas or different ways or improvements which will help us trying to implement the separate daemons easily. So right keyboard, okay. So some of the design ideas which we talked about were new abstractions like T-daemon abstraction, where we encapsulated all the daemon, what a daemon does. Now, most of the daemon design is based around Unix domain sockets. So all the client handling and so all management of clients and, you know, the basic startup of the code was abstracted as T-daemon, where we hope that it would help us significantly reduce the amount of code and the boilerplate which we have to write for writing each separate daemon. And also we talked about new daemons. So the basic idea was that instead of trying to write each daemon as a daemon, why not write a daemon as a computation? So each daemon actually is a async event computation. So that way we can combine multiple daemons into one, and finally, you know, all daemons into a single master daemon, which can start all services that we need as CTDB in a single shot. And also there were other ideas for testing. So MasterD had a way in which we can start all these daemons either in a single process or they could be forked separate processes. But when we are implementing most of these daemons, we had not really talked about how we are going to talk to multiple daemons. I mean, how one daemon is going to talk to other daemon. And that's where we are talking about designing a transport daemon. However, the transport daemon, the design was not very clear. So we tried to use CTDB itself as a transport via tunnels. So in this approach, we found quite a few flaws, and I'll sort of go through each of them to figure out how we try to solve those problems now, and what is our solution today to tackle these issues. So as I mentioned, all our initial design were based on Unix domain socket. These are the connection-oriented sockets. So each daemon had to manage all the client connections, which we did abstract in the tdaemon code. However, still there were a lot of issues and a lot of code duplication in each of the implementation of each of the daemon. Right. So that's when we thought about, okay, what about Unix datagram messaging? It's already part of Samba, and it also gets rid of a lot of client management code and client connection management code. And it gives us something which is very, very lightweight, and we can, and it's already proven in the Samba code base. So why not use that? So we have now designed a transport API based around Unix datagram messaging. It still has issues. It's still going undergoing revisions, but we think that's the right now the best solution we have for getting rid of sockets. And it also, that means that each daemon doesn't have its Unix domain socket, and we don't have to worry about a client trying to connect to different daemons via different sockets. I mean, it happens automatically in Unix datagram messaging, but it's hidden in the code base. Okay, so the next issue was, since our model of protocol was based on event-y design, we had to write protocol for each service or each daemon. And what ended up happening was that the header for each of the protocol became slightly different because there were different requirements for each of the daemon. So that means we couldn't consolidate all the protocol headers, and that became a problem. So we decided to abandon that approach completely and come up with a new protocol, which is based on the existing working protocol, but make sure to do it right. So this is how now the new transport header will look like. And make sure it's designed right. That means it's endian neutral on wire. So we can have big endian and little endian machines take part in a single cluster. And also provide proper marshalling API. So we have an abstraction now called transport packet, and a lot of APIs to do proper marshalling. So we have now taken, so we also solved this problem of protocol inconsistencies. there are two other problems. One of them was, since we have designed this all these daemons using tdaemon code, we found that it still required a lot of code for protocol handling, and most of the code was actually copy pasted and modified. So we are not very happy with the amount of code which we needed to write to get core of each daemon working. So we definitely need some more thought on how to handle or how to avoid this lot of copy pasting of code, because the more copy pasting of code we have, the chances of errors creeping in are quite high. And the other issue was is about complicated test setup. So the main focus of this redesign also was that we should be able to test each daemon separately in a sort of a unit test fashion, so that we can completely identify its behavior via tests. So that raises one issue, because sometimes, say for example, if you want to test service daemon, you also need event daemon to be running at the same time, because to test service daemon, it requires event daemon. So we needed to test multiple daemons running at the same time. So our idea was to treat each daemon as a computation, and then maybe compile each daemon code as a shared library, and then try to link it in master daemon, and then create separate sub daemons where, say, if service D only needed service D and event D, then maybe combine service D code and event D code and create a new binary for testing. And because master D already implemented single process versus fork process model, we can easily test in a single process, so it's easier to debug. However, there are a lot of build and dependency issues, and we couldn't get it building correctly, because a lot of the code was actually not implemented, whereas master D was implemented, and so we had to fake some of the function pointers and things like that. So it became a bit messy. So we again tried to go back and think about how we can better design this. So we went back to whiteboard and trying to design and trying to really understand what are we trying to achieve and what parts we want to abstract out. So if you look at any daemon, so it basically has some startup code. So where it handles command line options or handles configuration files and generally sets up the state for running the system, whether it has to fork a new process or become a daemon, or whether it is running in the same process, etc. Then also we have most of our daemons, they will have some clients talking to them, or they are talking between the same daemons on different nodes. So we obviously need transport and communication between them. So there is a clear layer of transport, setting up the transport or communication between the for each daemon. Well, and then based on the transport, you have the actual protocol where, based on the different requests, you have to do some action and do a reply, or sometimes just do a handshake, or any kind of protocol. And plus there is the actual business logic where each daemon implements the core logic for its function. Now, when we identified these, we realized that we can split the protocol into two parts, common and specific. That means, because now we have many daemons, some of the protocol which you'd like to implement was common to all the daemons. Say, for example, you want to make sure the daemon is alive and talking or responding. So say, for example, ping. So something like ping could be implemented in all the daemons. Now, we didn't want to make it, we don't want to implement it separately for each daemon. So we're trying to figure out whether we can do this once and implement it in a sort of a common way. So then we tried to separate also the business logic into two parts. So that's where we came up with sort of new abstractions or whatever. So we abstracted all the startup part and into a new T daemon. Now this is not the same T daemon abstraction as we had done before. This is a brand new T daemon abstraction. I already talked about Transport API, which is now based on Unix datagram messaging. And then we added sort of a new abstraction called T-Rex, which is basically sort of a backend of a daemon. So if T-Daemon sort of handles the front-end part of a daemon, then T-Rex are the backend implementation of a particular service. So it will become clear when I show you some sample code what a new daemon would look like. So here is an example of a transport daemon. So now transport daemon, basically it needs a list of a T daemon pointers, and it just calls T daemon main. So this is very, very simple. Now T daemon abstraction is basically single abstraction which rules all the daemons. It implements single process and fork process model. So in case of transport daemon, the transport T daemon function, which basically returns this structure, which identifies the name of the daemon, the endpoint ID, endpoint for communication, and the two backend, built-in and service backends. So the actual business logic now is separated into the backends. So what's T-Rex abstraction? So it encapsulates all the business logic. It's independent of transport. And so this is how you try to define any service. So it's a bunch of async computations. And so init is basically trying to initialize the state. Dispatch is when to handle all the packets. And run is to actually run sort of a main loop for each daemon. So service backend, as you can see, is actually implementing the service specific logic. So like protocol handling and main loop. So for transport, it implements a subset of those async computations which I mentioned. And the built-in backend is to support the common part of the protocol, right? So now we have a way of implementing the same code for all the daemons. So trying to ping or activate or deactivate a daemon, setting up the debug and things like that. So what's the way ahead? So we still have to do a few more things. So we need to handle config in a proper fashion in T-Rex backend. There may be some test infrastructure changes required. So we have transport daemon implementation right now, and we are trying to do some testing and then figure out how to implement all the other daemons. And that's our current plan. So Martin. still there?
Yep. Yep, I think I'm unmuted now. And are you going to unshare or?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, we've got a whole bunch of really good ideas. We have, and even the business logic for some of those demons, like the service demon and the failover demon, is written just against older infrastructure. So the business logic would be really easy to just, you know, we just define the protocol, we've got the business logic, let's go. So how do we go forward here? Let's think about that. It's always nice in a project, especially when there's a lot of code to make incremental progress, but the sorts of changes we're talking about are quite fundamental. So one thing that is not sane is to take the new transport API and retrofit that into the current CTDBD. CTDBD is very monolithic. It doesn't use modern C event rec async computations. So that's not really an option. One possibility is that we can do an alternative implementation of the transport API against the existing CTDB. That is, we would use the existing CTDB as a transport, write some of our new daemons against that transport API, and then somehow glue them together with a staple gun. That's, you know. So this is churn, because implementing that alternative version of the transport API is unnecessary work. But what it might let us do is write some of the daemons that we've got partially written and get them into the code and get them into a release instead of dumping everything out there at once. So that might be worth doing. Feel free to come and help us develop CTDB. As of this talk, the Samba team now has zero full-time CTDB developers. My work situation is changing a bit. I'm moving on to some new and exciting challenges. So I won't be full-time on CTDB anymore. So, you know, if somebody out there wants to dive in and help with this, please do. And, you know, it is sort of tiring working on this code base for 10 years and trying to rewrite it for 4 or 5. So, you know, some amount of burnout. Volunteers? Anyone? Okay, legal statement courtesy of IBM. Questions? So somehow have to figure out where the questions are. If there are any questions. Somewhere up there. Q&A. Right.
Jeremy says, do you have any easy tasks for new developers?
There's this talk, that's documentation. We would love to talk to people. It's another thing with trying to do a heck of a lot of development with not a lot of time. You know, writing docs when you could be writing design docs when you could be writing code. You know how it is.
Well, one idea could be, once we have implemented at least one of the daemons, then it sort of sets up the template for implementing all the rest, and we have sort of documented requirements for each daemon in various talks, so we can pull that together. So at least somebody can get a starting point on trying to implement, you know, one particular daemon. Yeah, exactly. So our idea was that since we had less time to code, we are trying to reduce the boilerplate as much as possible and implement on only the business logic of each daemon, and don't have to worry about transport, don't have to worry about how to start, how to fork, and all those complexities get hidden in the new abstractions which we have designed.
So, yeah, and the one of the scary things is we know what happens to some projects where they focus too much on frameworks. That can get a bit scary, but we have a lot of code. In the wiki, perhaps, Jeremy, we have a lot of trees with partial changes, and yes, it would be worth describing them in some central place like the wiki. Yep, very good idea.
Thank you very much. So the time is over, but you can ask more questions in the Q&A. There, they both can also answer the questions. Now we go into a 15-minute break. After that break, the both tracks will go forward.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you, everyone. It's always nice to be at SambrexP. Be nicer if we were there, hanging out with everyone. But such is life.